From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Nina Simone's 1966 song, Four Women, is a series of portraits, tributes to African-American women, and an expression of their historically suppressed anger.
My skin is black. My arms are long.
Christine Hamm's play, Nina Simone, Four Women, follows the activism and creative legacy of the fiercely talented Nina Simone. It's set in the aftermath of the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing that killed four young girls in Birmingham, Alabama in 1963. In this bombed-out sanctuary, four women grapple with how to respond to the violence and death, each playing a character from Simone's song.
My skin is brown.
My skin is black.
My skin is yellow.
My skin is tan.
What do they call
me? What do they call me?
What do they call me?
My name is Peaches.
Wow. And that is some of the women in the cast. Michelle Shea is with us. She directs a play that's now running at the Southwest Arts Center in Atlanta. And she's our guide today of sorts for a conversation about the play and the influential and complicated life of Nina Simone. Michelle, thanks so much for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Also with us, Adrienne Reynolds. She portrays Aunt Sarah in the production. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And Michelle, a little background first. The woman known as the High Priestess of Soul originally inspired to be a classical pianist. In fact, America's first black female classical pianist. She lived a really full life, but can you give us a little background?
Well, Nina was a Southern belle. Isn't that wonderful? That's part of what makes her great is because she's from North Carolina, a little teeny tiny town called Tyron, North Carolina. In fact, the place was very humble, is very humble, and her birth house is now a place where people can come and tour and see.
Yeah, they made it a National Historic Landmark.
It's a national landmark, yes. And there's a beautiful sculpture dedicated to her that's there as well. And she was a prodigy child musically. She began playing piano from the age of 2 years old.
Wow.
And started singing like at 8 months. There were things that she just knew. So she arrived on this planet quite exceptional. And when a friend of her mother's, Miss Mozzie, noticed that she had this talent, then they developed it. And out of that came the passion and the affirmation of everybody around her that she should be a classical pianist, which became her big, big dream.
Adrienne, your character is Aunt Sarah.
My back is strong. Strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again.
This song was banned on the radio when it first came out as being anti-women. But a lot of people said, you know, there are stereotypes, mammy, you know, a prostitute, a buttoned-up teacher, which seemed like stereotypes of black women. But do you think that's how Simone saw them, Nina Simone?
No, I don't. I think that Nina was very honest, right? So I think it was a honest reflection of these type of archetypal women that have helped or have been prevalent in the African-American community. And I even think that there's something to be said about accepting that. And we would not have many of the women that we have now if it was not for Aunt Sarah. That's black kids, that's Caucasian kids, you know, that's in all of the communities. Because Aunt Sarah helped to raise generations of children that have impacted this country. So there's an honest need for Aunt Sarah and to look at that with respect rather than to look at it as something that's negative. It's a very positive thing to be an Aunt Sarah. I think most of us have needed her in our life at some point.
Michelle, that play deals with the ways that Black women from different generations and classes and degrees of color, which we'll certainly get to, respond to the violence perpetrated against them. Aunt Sarah does represent this older generation of thought. Are these kind of generational arguments still happening around protest and activism?
To me, that's one of the most central aspects of this, is what are our values? Do you value human life over your hatred? And what does it take to change that? And just like that time, parents wanted to protect their children from the awful, blinding white light of what racism does and the limitations. I think parents feel that way now, but it's always the youth who carry our optimism that break through that and say, this is the world we want to live in, you know? So, and eventually the old folks have to join, because the part of the whole point of the 60s movement is that you had to, regardless of how much you were afraid, you had to stand up. And that was one of the biggest points that was made after these children died, was in terms of the whole world, the whole nation, is that you must stand up because this is not right.
That is Michelle Shea. She's director of Kenny Leon's True Colors theater production of Nina Simone for Women, and also Adrian Reynolds, who plays Aunt Sarah?
Aunt Sarah. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for speaking with us. Michelle, please stay with us. This is On Second Thought. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. We're talking today about the singer and pianist whose career was fueled and derailed by her activism. With me in the studio is Michelle Shea, director of Nina Simone for Women, and Wendy Fox Williams, who plays one of those women, Sophronia.
My skin is yellow. My hair is long. Between two worlds, I do belong.
So we hear between two worlds. What two worlds is Sophronia caught in between?
The world of black and white. She is of mixed race, and she is a product of rape.
My father was rich and white. He forced my mother late one night.
How does this, her past, her as a character, help us understand this history of sexual violence and slavery, really, in the U.S.?
Well, during slavery, that was quite common between the slave masters and the slave women. And that's just a reflection of what is going on today.
Wendy, how did you connect with this character of Sophronia?
Her strength to overcome.
Yeah.
Her strength to go on no matter what. There are a couple moments in the play where she's being called high yellow, where she's being poked and prodded for her color and her elite status. And that's, she very much wants to belong, to be a part of the community. And she's constantly fighting with other people and herself on who she is.
Hmm. It's like she has to prove even more than other people. The
yes,
onus of proof is upon her.
She definitely does.
That she's black enough.
That she's black enough. And sometimes her self-worth and her self-doubt, which also bleeds into my personal life, obviously, it can be exhausting to go through life and not fit in. You know, I had to go through the same thing in high school. I wasn't black enough for the black kids, and I wasn't white enough. I was popular, but I was also hated at the same time. So it was very difficult upbringing. And I relate to Sophronia on a lot of levels, not necessarily on the sexual assault side, but just trying to figure out, where do I fit in? Where do I feel comfortable? Where do I feel comfortable being myself? Where is my power? How do I sit in my power? And she comes to that realization
when she finally accepts herself for who she is at the end of the play.
Yeah.
And Michelle, the dynamic between these women is so fascinating, especially because the colorism sets up a kind of hierarchy. And, you know, the character of Sophronia, she's lighter than any of them. She's also more educated. So there's a kind of class dynamic. How does that affect the interaction of the characters in the play?
Well, one character in particular, the playwright uses to polarize and express this, it's Sophronia and Sweet Thing, and there's a man between them who is the catalyst. Like, which women does the man choose? And frankly, in our community, this is something that happens, which in the other communities, it might be the preference of blonde over brown hair or whatever. Which ones are the guys drawn to? Do you have big boobs or not? You know, there's phrases in our community like the black of the berry, the sweet of the juice, this kind of thing. And it can be pretty bitter in terms of what happens between people. And we lose a lot of love for that. And that's one of the things that Christina is experimenting with. She herself is pretty light-skinned. She's not all the way fair. I'm really fair, and people don't know what you are. Mm-hmm. And so the issue of belonging is key for all of us as human beings in terms of the place of identity in the core of us and the importance of that and the need to be part of a community. It causes a big wound, and that wounding is at the essence of Nina Simone for women. What do you do with that wound? How do you heal that wound? How do you transcend that wound?
One of Nina Simone's perhaps forms of transcendence was performance.
Absolutely. Music did it. Freedom is very, very important to her, as was truth. And so we are driven by things like that, big words like that, and they become a quest.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me.
She was shackled or girdled, so to speak, by many things in terms of how she wanted to be as an artist, her obligations to her family, having to play like a mule and work and work and work, enjoying the benefits of that, but her body paid the price. A show pony, as she calls it in the play, of any artist that's really famous, they get tired. You know, she sacrificed personal time with her daughter for the sake of music. Music was who she was really, really married to. There's a war going on inside, and she manages to win that war enough for us to inspire us, and she's still inspiring us, Miss Nina Simone.
Breaking rocks out here on the chain gang. Breaking rocks and serving my time.
That is Michelle Shea. She is director of Nina Simone for Women. And also with us, Wendy Fox Williams. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just ahead, we meet another of the four women from Nina Simone's famous song. This is On Second Thought. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Whose little girl am I? Anyone who has money to buy.
Well, it is Thursday. It's long-form conversation day here at On Second Thought, and we're doing some of our own discovery of Nina Simone, the singer, pianist, and activist who died in self-imposed exile in France in 2003. Michelle Shea is with us. She's director of Nina Simone for Women. Kenny Leon's True Colors Theater Company production is now running in Atlanta. And actor Jordan Fraser also joins us to talk about Simone and the character of Sweet Thing.
What do they call me?
Hello, Jordan. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. I just want to refresh everybody. If you're just joining us, the play set one day after the bomb tore apart the sanctuary of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham. Now, four women representing historic, let's say, types are there in the ruins. They're enraged. They're grieved. They're interacting with each other. There's been a common critique, especially among African-American actors, that the role of maid or mammy or prostitute mm-hmm. is the common refrain. How do you find nuance in a character like Sweet Thing beyond the type?
Well, I feel like finding nuance is finding the what is her incentive? What is the reason that she's doing this? Where does it come from? There's a line that says, my body is the way that I protest. That's a true sentiment for many people, is taking control of what has been previously abused or previously misused. And she is taking something that she could not control and now saying, I'm going to take control of what was previously caused me to be objectified. I will objectify myself. I'm going to be an entrepreneur of my own body.
Well, for Sweet Thing, it is power and her perceived edge over women like the more educated, lighter-skinned Sophronia. Mm-hmm. How does it feel inside of the character of Sweet Thing?
Well, I think it approaches something that I've experienced even in my own life, of this element of colorism being the second choice. We see it a lot in media even today, of how things are cast even within the Black community. It's almost like you feel that the lighter skinned Black woman is favored, the one with caramel skin, or they've gotten Photoshopped to look lighter, you know? So what the way that Sweet Thing has internalized that, you know, why aren't me and Sophronia on the same level? Don't we have some of the same blood? Yet we see that men tend to go for her. So I end up having to utilize my body. Men tend to respect her, whereas men see me as an object, you know? So I think there's a really deep-seated element of colorism within the Black community that we are still exercising those demons, you know? And it goes all the way back to slavery. So I think that's a very potent element of our relationship, me and Sophronia.
Right. And Sweet Thing appears to very much own that sexuality or her ability to seduce, which are, you know, pillars of feminism in some way. And feminists did. They wanted to own Nina Simone, who said she didn't really feel a part of that movement, which is common among women of color. Mm-hmm. Do you think, Michelle, that Nina Simone feels like she had to choose between, you know, the Black struggle and the women's movement?
I don't think she had to choose between them, but definitely there are universal things that go around the world in terms of us as women. Mm-hmm. But then there are particular lenses through which we look from our own cultures. And our bodies have been an issue for all time. Mm-hmm. And so Sweet Thing is dealing with that. And also, I feel that honoring the power of it, as well, as she says in the play, there is a new kind of African-American woman being born in our young women that it's not defined yet, but it's extremely powerful, very, very smart, and resourceful.
Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about me.
Along with these searing protest songs and the anger, she brought really deep sensuality to a number of songs. I Love You, Porgy was her first hit, in fact, and it's a show tune, but she made it something else.
Porgy, don't let him take me. Don't let him handle me and drive me. If you can keep me.
Here is just a little bit of the song, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad.
Michelle, do you consider these four characters all aspects of Nina Simone?
Absolutely.
Are they in conflict?
Yes, they do come in conflict, just like different aspects of the own voices in your own head. When you try to get something done, they both stand for themselves, and then they also challenge Nina to actually move through and become who she claims she wants to become in the event of creating, being willing to write Mississippi Goddamn.
Michelle Shea, she is director of a new production of Nina Simone for Women. Jordan Fraser plays Sweet Thing. Jordan, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Just ahead, we'll speak with the actor who plays Nina Simone herself. This is On Second Thought. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me.
We are delving today into the remarkable, complicated life of the artist Nina Simone. Four Women, a play inspired by Simone's life and a song of the same name, is on at Southwest Arts Center in Atlanta. The play's director, Michelle Shea, is with us, along with Regina Marie Williams. She actually originated the role of Peaches at a Park Square theater production. Hello, Regina.
Yes. Hi, Virginia.
So I understand that this was actually a performance of yours that inspired in part this play.
Yes.
What happened?
That is correct. Well, I became very fortunate, and someone liked the 90-minute musical version that I did of the arc of Nina's life and asked that we make it into a play. And so we decided, let's do that. Who do you want to write it? And Christina Hamm wrote it. And I'm not a writer, and what Christina has come up with is nothing I could have conceived, but I did want to be sure that four women were involved. So I believe that one of my gifts to this is that no matter where this production is done, it cannot be done without four Black women.
Yeah. And Peaches, her stanza, yes, is about rage, you know, which comes across in lyrics and performances by Nina Simone, certainly. I mean, Mississippi Goddamn is not blowing,
yeah,
in the wind, right?
No, no. And I think rage is part of it. It comes from rage. Sometimes we have to get to that place to be able to say, what is it that I'm going to do? What is it that I'm not doing? And I think that Nina realized that what she needed to do was to have her art speak in a different way, because that's where she had a platform. I deal with that now, trying to decide where is it that I can make a difference? What is it that I'm supposed to do now? And doing this production, to me, was a gift, and it was an opportunity to say, this is how I'm going to make a difference. We can't always do it on a grand scale. There are not a lot of genius chairs, as my director would say, like Nina Simone's chair or Martin Luther King's chair or Eartha Kitt's chair. But we have our own, and where do we speak from?
So where Nina Simone spoke from meant for her, especially in the society that she lived with then, that she paid a deep price for her, I would say, unblinking critiques of racism, naming it by place. What happened to her because of that? What kind of price did she pay?
Well, with Four Women, they wouldn't play the record. Mississippi Goddamn records were broken. Radio disc jockeys refused to play it and stuff like that. But nevertheless, you see that person who is the water washing away the hardness of the stone of consciousness of resistance to what is the truth. She, to this very day, like MLK and many others, outlives and has outlived the price that she paid, you know? But that willingness to pay the price with your body, with your time, with your mind, with everything, is a hallmark of that period of the 60s, if you recall.
Yes. Well, obviously, she's a person of a great spectrum. Mm. Her daughter, Lisa Simone, spoke about her mom's life on and off stage, the kind of duality of her life, in the 2015 documentary, What Happened, Miss Simone?
People think that when she went out on stage, she became Nina Simone. My mother was Nina Simone 24/7. And that's where it became a problem. Everything fell apart.
Now, there have been a couple of different sources that propose that Nina Simone suffered from bipolar disorder. She actually died of breast cancer, I believe, if I have that right. But in the play, she's four women, but there are many different sides and aspects fighting against each other. Yeah. What does that mean for you when you're playing her?
Fortunately, I have Michelle Shea as a director who allows or is teaching me or coaching me to find the many different colors and layers of rage, the many different layers and colors of love or fear or anger or feeling, experiencing that young child, the vulnerability. I mean, we're all layered human beings, but I think Nina Simone, that Lisa saying, yes, she was Nina Simone 24/7. That's hard to live with, being a diva from sunup to sundown. It's a challenge and it's really exhausting, but I am loving the opportunity. I mean, because she laughs, she finds and she enjoys people and she uses her words and she likes to talk fast. And she, there's a clip to her. There's when you're around people like that, they experience life in a way that you don't get to do it. And I think there's an envy in it. It's fantastic.
Regina Marie Williams, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome, Virginia. Thank you for the invitation. It was great to be here.
And Michelle, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You can see a trailer from Kenny Leon's True Colors Theater Company production of Four Women that's on now at Southwest Arts. Just go to gpbnews.org. And you can also hear from all the women we spoke to today choosing their favorite Nina Simone song of the moment. Not an easy task. Again, that's at gpbnews.org.